Welcome back to Plot Pit. I'm your host, William Atkinson, here with host John LeMay. And in the pit today, we are talking John Murray Spears, spiritualism, and
the God Machine.
The God Machine. So let's get to it and begin the descent. John, introduce us to John Murray Spears.
I was fascinated when I found out about John Murray Spears. Can't remember where I first heard about him. Maybe it was the Lore podcast or something like that. Anyways, Lore is awesome. It provides a lot of good fodder for stories, same as we do. So John Murray Spears was a spiritualist who was really prominent in the 1850s. And he had this crazy idea that he wanted to create a mechanical body for the second coming, basically like for a messiah or false messiah, where the spirit would inhabit this machine, and it was just a really crazy deal. Now, when you say something like that, you probably envision a humanoid android or something, totally not like that. It looked like a really weird lamp or something, totally not humanoid in any way or form. It had these bells hanging from it that they felt that the spirits would manipulate. And so the incident, how it happened is, He creates this weird machine for about $2,000 back in 1854, whenever it was.
Which I looked it up, and it's like $76,000 now.
Okay, so yeah. And so this woman comes along and claims that she is like pregnant in the spirit and has this weird spiritual transference with the machine, where she claims that she imbues it with some sort of spirit, and then everybody just kind of gathers around and oohs and ahs at it, and they think that sometimes they can see it move, and they even have this idea that maybe it can self-replicate. And if it were to self-replicate, in their mind, it would end the curse of Adam, where you have to toil in the soil and all that. And it's kind of supposedly how it ended was like a scene from a Universal Monster movie where the quote-unquote villagers got riled up about it, and the villagers, so to speak, come along with their torches and pitchforks, and they destroy the machine, and John Murray Spears, you know, kind of fades off into defeat. And supposedly, though, in 2019, it was found in a hoarder's attic in Colorado.
And you can look up the photos online of what it looks like, supposedly. It's not yet authenticated. But when I looked at it, it reminded me of something that might look like a rotary speaker.
Oh, good. Yeah, good way to describe it, because I have no idea how to describe this thing. It's unlike anything I've ever seen, really.
It's a very interesting contraption. Uh-huh. So we're also going to use the...
Yeah, Pascagoula, I believe. I've never heard the word pronounced. I just see it spelled. Pascagoula, Mississippi. We did it last episode. They had this intense heat wave in the year 1874. It's like this cloud came from out of nowhere and made everybody miserable. They thought they were going to burn alive. Then it disappeared. Then about 100 years later, 1973... these two men, one of them's name was Calvin Parker. I'm sorry, I can't remember the other one's name, but they saw these aliens in the same exact spot, more or less. And these aliens were these very strange beings that had like carrot noses and some of the strangest aliens you've ever seen. So it's just interesting those things happened 100 years apart.
So there is a lot of information about John Murray Spears that's out there. You can hit the web and run off to it. I looked up John Murray Spears, John M. Spears, J. M. Spears, all those combinations in chroniclingamerica.gov. Some stuff came up, not a lot did, but apparently this gentleman, and I have no reason to doubt it from the legitimate articles that I did see in respectable publications, John Spears was an abolitionist and somebody who was against capital punishment. There is about an hour-long YouTube video of this gentleman talking about the amazing life that John Spears lived, and he starts off with that God Machine story, mm-hmm. and then he runs into, okay, just promise me you'll keep an open mind, because there's a catch. And he goes through a lot of the history of John Spears, kind of gives a biography, and this gentleman was not all lunacidal. And I think I just made up a word.
It sounds like a real word to me, or if it's not, it should be.
If it's not, then I will just email Webster's and say, add it. The point is, he spent a lot of his time dedicating his life to ending slavery, and in the abolitionist movement, he also worked with youth in the judicial system during the time. And a lot of death row death row inmates in the judicial system, where a lot of other pastors and spiritual advisors would not go. So he's kind of a philanthropist or a humanitarian type person. And he's, to set all this up with the God machine, he's effectively, to summarize the story, he's looking at the world, realizes that there's a lot of evil in it, and he doesn't understand God creating evil. And so he goes off into the spiritualism movement, and there's a whole body of research that you could go there. And so that kind of sets his story up to the God machine, which we're going to use here in just a minute. Another individual that's of quite interest in this case is Margaret Fox, the middle sister of the Fox sisters, which became basically a household name during 1850, where they were claiming to be mediums to the spirit world, and they were running around doing seances. And
they called that rapping, right?
Spirit rapping.
Yeah.
Spirit rapping. Eventually, it's shown to be a complete, you know, farce, and mm-hmm. it's just a matter of they had really good understanding of how sound carried in very reverberating in rooms. And so imagine somebody who had a mastery of ventriloquism and nobody knew it. That's effectively, and they were able to figure out how to like move the table and all sorts of other stuff. So, you know, they're running these seances and it's a complete facade, but a lot of people bought into it. Going back to Spears real quick, he had a publication called The Prisoner's Friend, and there's actually an article of some other publications complaining that he's not able to produce fast enough or get it to him. One of them is, "Prisoner's Friend comes to us very irregularly, which we much regret, as we would like to preserve a file. We have seen nothing of numbers 5 and 6 and would like the publishers to forward them. If the irregularity is their fault, they would please be a little bit more particular in mailing them to us. To our readers, we would say that the above-named paper is published weekly in Boston at $1 a year. Those who are interested in the abolition of the gallows cannot perhaps do better than subscribe for, read, and circulate it." So this came out of the Anti-Slavery Bugle, March 6, 1846. So this is at the height and the fervor of, you know, that abolitionist movement going into the Civil War about 20 years later. And we also have another one. This is after the God Machine incident. So consider John Spears. He's got this 1854 incident in Boston that just sounds ludicrous. Mm-hmm. But he has undercurrents and undertones of being a well-respected individual that's deeply moved by human plight. And in 1858, there's a lot of talk about what happened in 54. And there's this guy who's writing into the editor of this local newspaper, basically defending Spears. And I'll just read the first blip. I'll have the link in the description of the podcast. "Perhaps in justice to my good friend T.S. Sheldon of Randolph, New York." Now, that's allegedly where the machine was dismantled by the angry mob. "Randolph, New York, as well as the cause of truth generally, I ought to correct some very gross misrepresentations which are going the rounds of newspapers and which were copied into your paper of Friday with some additions." And then it just goes on. He's setting up kind of what he believed to be a complete falsehood of the character of Mr. Spears and T.S. Sheldon here. So that sets up the issue with Spears. The Fox sisters are running around in the spiritualism movement, tied with Spears, not necessarily in person, but for our story's sake, we're going to tie them together. And they're operating in the same, you know, spiritualism movement and everything else. Later, they recant, and it's all exposed as a falsehood. And it's like 1851, so the fervor didn't last long around these folks. But the middle sister, Margaret, was the most interesting. Why? Because the middle sister, Margaret Fox, ended up marrying this Dr. Kane, who was a physician and turned surgeon, worked in the U.S. Navy. And this Dr. Kane was granted the expedition paid for by Grinnell. And the second expedition was from the USS Advance, which sailed out of New York on May 31st, 1855, specifically looking for the lost expedition of Sir John Franklin, who was seeking the Northwest Passage in the Arctic.
Interesting.
Now, this is his second trip, and he's the one who sets this up. He gets Grinnell to finance it and everything else. Well, when you look at the historical record, you find out 2 years later in 1853 that he sailed out of New York, I believe, and it was 55 where some other events happened, but nobody hears from him and his expedition. So later, the U.S. government has this happening. They're wondering where their naval officer went, so they authorize a rescue mission. A resolution respecting the Arctic expedition commanded by E.K. Kane, resolved by the Senate and the House of Representatives of the United States of America in Congress assembled, that the Secretary of Navy be and he is hereby authorized to provide and dispatch a suitable naval or other steamer and, if necessary, tender to the Arctic seas for the purposes of rescuing or affording relief. So the U.S. government is sending an expedition to go rescue Kane. Ultimately, it's an Arctic expedition that kind of goes awry, looking for another Arctic expedition that went awry. So my question is, what did Kane find up there?
Do you think he found like a crashed spaceship or something?
Well, we know that he found the site with some burials of the expedition from the British guy looking for the Northwest Passage. Mm-hmm. You could layer all sorts of stuff on that.
Yeah.
Okay. Now, my head is in the following space. You've got the incident of the unusual object in Mississippi. Every 100 years, you've got the 1874 incident, and then you have the other incident, which is in your book, where it's describing 100 years later in 1973 or 74 of one of the more credible UFO abduction
things happening. Yes, yeah.
So let's rewind the clock. Let's go back to 1774, before the U.S. Revolution, okay? And it's this crashing of an alien spacecraft. And because of the technology, the survivors get thrown out of phase. Nobody can see them. They figure out and live through, they live through the U.S. Revolution, the birth. So they're like walking around. Nobody sees them. So they can like go through walls or do kind of whatever. So they end up getting very familiar with people like John Quincy Adams, Thomas Jefferson, Benjamin Franklin, among some others. And it just so happens to be that these individuals are part of what John Murray Spears called the Association of Electricizers.
Yeah, I don't remember if we told our listeners that Spears claimed that he communicated with Washington and Benjamin Franklin, and that's part of his history and lore.
Correct. I kind of left that for this whole purpose. So these aliens or extraworldly beings figure out how to communicate with Spears because Spears is looking for the spiritualism movement and he was experimenting or playing around with electricity. Okay. And you've got this situation where they basically tell him to create the God machine and they bathe it with all sorts of stuff. And what they're really having him do is create a homing beacon.
Oh, interesting.
And what this ties into is the spiritualism movement where you've got the Fox sisters and Kane marries the middle of the Fox sisters a couple of years into like 1855, 1856 somewhere. And specifically, he's concerned about her and gets her educated. She leaves the spiritualism movement and becomes kind of a Catholic. So if John... if Kane comes back from the Arctic, what did he see that would want him to convert a spiritualist into Christendom?
Ah, I see. I think he saw the UFO. I don't know. The crashed flying saucer, unless you have other ideas.
Well, I'm going to toss it out there. Let's just see where it goes. The incident with the God machine sets it up to where the homing beacon happens. And in the 1970s, you have a repeat of this event.
That's right.
Something else that happens about 1970. John Murray Spears is buried at Moriah Cemetery. And at Moriah Cemetery, there is a statue called the Silent Sentry. And it was dedicated to watch over fallen Union soldiers from the Civil War. Well, we know John Spears was an abolitionist, and it's conceivable in the realm of artistic license for fiction that John Murray Spears hid something in the cemetery that the silent sentry got put over.
Oh, yeah, I like it.
Now, 1970 comes along. You've got this God machine which disappears. You could have this cult following that's focused around what John Murray Spears built. And eventually they're trying, they know 100 years later, this homing beacon is supposed to activate, bring something back. And so they go and they rob this grave. Coincidentally, the statue was built by two French immigrants that came over, and they were commissioned to build the statue. One of the artist that basically did this, his name was John Quincy Adams. Now, he dies in 1910, but it's an interesting kind of situation, like where the and that particular foundry was called the Bureau Brothers Foundry.
There's a lot to work with there.
Oh, yeah. Especially the fact they'd commissioned another Civil War statue that's called the General George Thomas, which was a Union general in the Civil War. So we've got the Civil War anti-slavery theme kind of come through here. So this element of liberty going back to the revolutionary times. Okay. So these aliens aren't necessarily hostile. That's my take.
Yeah.
And you've got all sorts of things that you could play with here. The Fox Sisters pulls into this with Kane and tying that to the Arctic expedition. And in the 20s or the 30s, you've got Admiral Byrd, right, with his North and South Pole expeditions. Yeah. So that's kind of the story arc that I've got, is some, you know, benevolent aliens or maybe neutral aliens. They crash. They need help because they're out of phase. They can't really communicate. And they figure out how to communicate, at least with one person, convince him to build a homing beacon, which maybe E.T. phones home in the 70s.
So going back to your stolen statue, I was thinking, you know, according to the lore, the God machine was destroyed in 1850, whatever. But there's also the stories that say that he just hid it. So maybe he hid it under that statue, and that's why they took off the statue and got the machine out from underneath it. And then it did its homing beacon thing. And that's why you had the aliens show up in Pascagoula in 1973.
And if you do that, you might be able to explain the credible alien abduction that occurred to those two gentlemen.
Yeah.
And then, of course, the aliens wipe their memory and they take their friends home, who have then since been here for 200 years. Now, that's kind of my story arc. I specifically liked the element of spiritualism in it, because it adds kind of a explanation as to where all of this comes from. And my thought is, in a story arc of Act 1, Act 2, Act 3, you get to cover the topic of liberty pretty well across the course of the history of the United States. You've got the French immigrants coming over and starting what actually was probably one of the more successful and well-known foundries for statues and such. And that ties it potentially back over to the French Revolution, which happened not long after the U.S. Revolution. And it was a much different revolution than what we experienced here, for our listeners who know the history. And if you don't, I'd recommend going out and read it. It's fascinating, the French Revolution that happened. So in effect, you could have, if you wanted, benevolent or neutral aliens that crashed here, and then hostile aliens which crashed in France. And two countries taking wildly different paths down their quest for liberty. Now, with that, you've got the situation of the homing beacon and John Spears, and so the origin story of spiritualism, like, that could be explained by these aliens that are out of phase with everybody, trying to figure out and test everything. You know, how can we communicate with these people?
Yeah.
You know, they can't see us, they can't hear us, you know, so what are we going to do in order to be able to communicate with these people that we're either needing help from or whatever? I mean, I can imagine it. What would it like to live out a phase? And it's just like you and your buddy or something for hundreds of years and you're all alone. Like, think you would get a little lonely, or at the very least, you'd kind of become a Loki and just want to start playing tricks.
Yeah, for sure.
So what do you think?
Oh, I think that's an excellent idea. Way more epic. We won't really get into my take on the God Machine. We won't flesh it out, but my path I would have taken with the God Machine is the whole finding it in the attic in 2019. And I'm not a big fan of horror films and things like that, but I am thinking along the lines of Annabelle and The Conjuring, where you have this cursed machine in the attic. Maybe you're cleaning out grandma's attic. Maybe the kids move in with grandma. And this machine just starts causing all sorts of, hauntings and chaos, and they have to research its history, and that would be the big surprise that they learn that it is the alleged God machine created by John Murray Spears and all that. And that was my kind of more horror movie take on it.
I like it. That's almost a Jumanji thing.
Mm-hmm, yeah. Maybe a future episode one day.
Oh, yeah.
Circle back to it in the future.
And I could, because of the way that the machine looks, somebody could find it. I could take a music twist on it because it looks like what a rotary speaker kind of looks
kinda,
like.
Kinda, yeah.
And based upon the historical records of what you described, this thing was making weird sounds and moving. And so it could be like this cursed, enchanted banshee machine.
Yeah.
Maybe instead of a banshee out of, you know, that old lore banshee legends, it's not an actual spirit. It's this weird mechanical thing that communicates with another galaxy or even another dimension.
Or another reality.
Another reality. Yeah. Or a combination of realities, and that's why it's so chaotic. It's like white noise you're picking. You haven't figured out how to fine-tune the frequency to pick up the one channel.
I know it is. It's the alternate dimension version of John Murray Spears ringing the bell and playing around with it. But in the other John Murray Spears dimension, he just sees the bell moving by itself.
Ooh, okay. A thought occurs. Maybe this is a future episode, maybe not. Completely off anything we've discussed so far. What if there are five alternate universes, and each universe has its own specific sense? You've got the universe of hearing or sound. You got the universe of sight. You got the universe of physical touch or feeling, right? And the only way anybody can evolve or something is figuring out from the one sense or your one dimension how to tap into your split self.
Okay.
I wouldn't even know where to start with something like that.
I think we need to watch Everything Everywhere All at Once or whatever it's called, because I haven't seen it yet, and that probably sounds along those lines.
I haven't even heard of that.
It's with Michelle Yao, where she there's all sorts of alternate versions of reality, and she like kind of exists in all of them all at once, and it's overwhelming for her, and it sounded pretty cool. So
interesting.
Yeah,
I am aware of a book called Flatland. Are you familiar with that one? No. Flatland is a book of kind of a mathy, nerdy type thing where it's from the perspective of one dimension trying to explain what two dimensions is. And I mean, analogously, you could talk about, okay, so if I know what two dimensions looks like, what does three dimensions look like? Another good mathy book is Zero, The Biography of a Dangerous Idea. That one's fun. And then another mathy weird book is it's about Goldbach's conjecture. I'll put the link in the description. I cannot remember the title of it right now. It's a fictitious book about this guy who's spending his whole life trying to prove Goldbach's conjecture and goes nuts. It's a fictitious story, but Goldbach's conjecture is true. A lot of people Goldbach's conjecture is indeed an actual mathematical problem that is yet unsolved. A lot of people have spent a massive amount of their mathematical life trying to solve this problem. And so that's where that author took that, kind of twisted it and went off into an interesting story. And so you kind of learn a little bit about what Goldbach's conjecture is, who Goldbach was, and then, you know, the difficulties of the problem. And it's told in a fun, upbeat kind of way where it's a... you would think, you know, oh, it's a novel about math. Ew. No, it's a novel about a guy who goes crazy over math. So think John Nash in A Beautiful Mind.
Okay.
All right. Well, folks, you've been listening to Plot Pit. I'm your host, William Atkinson, here with host
John LeMay.
And John, tell us this book that you have in front of us that we took two of the incidents out of.
Yeah, you know, typically a lot of my books are just collections of weird newspaper articles that I try to run some commentary on and ferret out any truth there might be in them. And today we got the John Murray Spears article out of my book Cowboys and Monsters, Vampires, Mummies, and Werewolves of the Wild West.
Excellent. And then we took the incident in...
Pascagoula came from Real Cowboys and Aliens, Old West UFOs.
And as far as the information that I pulled out of Chronicling America, I'll have links in the description below, as well as a link to the gentleman on YouTube who talks about John Murray Spears in a more biographical way, and you get a massive amount of information. And he pulls articles and journal entries and such from John Murray Spears himself, including his paper, The Prisoner's Friend. Fascinating life, fascinating character, even though you've got this strange story, which sounds entirely ludicrous, of the mechanical messiah.
Yeah, tell us what you would do with the John Murray Spears God machine.
Yes, so if you're listening to this on Apple, Google, or anywhere, you can catch us on Twitter at Plot Pit. And if you're interested in having your stuff or submissions, if you want to be on the show, if you have weird articles you want us to know about, or just reach out, submissions@plotpit.com, and you can let us know what you think. Send us your feedback. In the meantime,
this is Plot Pit,
and I'm your host, William Atkinson, here with John LeMay, and we have ended the descent into the pit. We'll catch you next time, folks.